If you're looking to level up your points redemptions and make the most out of your points and miles, make sure you check out our step-by-step video tutorials on the GeoBreeze Travel YouTube channel. And if you're looking to level up your points earning game and get access to points earning techniques that you won't often find online, we're opening up for another cohort of my signature course, The Points Accelerator, very soon. You'll get access to exclusive offers like earning 5 points per dollar on fee-free Visa and MasterCard gift cards anytime you want without having to leave your couch to drive to Staples. Sign up for the waitlist by going to geobreezetravel.com/waitlist and check out what some of our students have to say about the course.
I went on an amazing trip to visit Everest Base Camp and the Himalayas. We also explored the culture of Kathmandu and the surrounding areas, all on points. We flew economy on the way to Kathmandu, Nepal, on Qatar Airways, stopping in Doha. We met up with the Sierra Club for the actual Everest Base Camp trek that was 14 days long. We flew helicopters from Kathmandu International Airport to Lukla Airport. On the way back home, we had the privilege of flying business class in Qatar Airways Q Suites. At the time, I just had Discoverous benefits with Hyatt due to the Hyatt personal credit card, but the stays with points were very cheap in Nepal, and we stayed at the Hyatt Regency Kathmandu. If we booked this trip with cash, it would have cost easily over $20,000. I'm so glad I saved that much money with what I learned in the Points Accelerator program.
I will say that when we went to Shenandoah National Park, we stayed at Keswick Hall, which is a small luxury hotel. So we were able to stay for 25,000 Hyatt points per night. That property is gorgeous. It's so luxurious. It was renovated last year and they added on to it. So everything is so fresh and so clean. The restaurant really was very good. The pool is beautiful. The golf course and the grounds are beautiful. So I would highly recommend Keswick Hall. And it's not far from the national park. I want to say like 30 miles, maybe. It doesn't take too long to get there, but that's at the southern entrance of Shenandoah. And then of course, Shenandoah has a 100-mile stretch of roadway through it. So it can take a while to get to where you want to be in the Shenandoah National Park, but it's worth it. It's a gorgeous place to stay.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Mariah from Points for the Memories. Mariah is passionate about showcasing how to budget for travel and save using points and miles. She grew up in a family that could not afford to travel, and in her adult life, she used a detailed trip budget to give her confidence to travel without overspending. Now, she shares her Points for the Memories trip budget spreadsheet for free so that others can plan their travel expenses and track their points and mile savings. Mariah enjoys her work in healthcare, but loves taking every opportunity to visit new destinations with her husband, Eric. They've been to 16 U.S. national parks and counting. Their favorite trips feature beautiful hikes and amazing food, especially artisanal ice cream. In this episode, Mariah and I discuss how to plan vacations to national and state parks using points and miles. Everything from finding a Hyatt place near Moab, to Marriott hotels near Glacier National Park, to the luxurious Alila Ventana Big Sur. If you like using points for miscellaneous excursions, one of the most popular ways to use points for excursions is with Capital One Miles. With cards like the Capital One Venture and Venture X, you'll earn at least 2 points per dollar on all purchases and can cash them out for purchases like passes to different national parks. Remember, if you decide to apply for the Venture or Venture X cards or any other cards, never apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. If you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. We have the links to the Venture and Venture X cards for you and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. Hi, Mariah. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hi, Julia. It's so nice to be meeting with you tonight.
Of course. I am so excited to chat with you. I'm so glad to meet you as well. And we are going to be talking about how to do different trips to national parks on points and miles, which I know a lot of people like to do as well. Some people think that points and miles is only for if you want to go to the Maldives or you want to go to France or Amsterdam or something like that. But there's a whole world of other styles of travel that you can do on points and miles as well. So
Before we jump into that, though, tell us about yourself, your background, and how did you get into the wonderful game of points?
Yeah, so I grew up in a family that really didn't do a lot of traveling. My parents still don't do a whole lot of traveling. It just wasn't in the overall budget for things. So we would typically do like the same very small vacation each year. Once I got married, my husband and I wanted to do some traveling, but we were super frugal and trying to save a lot of money and living on one income when we first got married. So we were very careful with what we spent. And my husband's brother and sister-in-law invited us to go to Yellowstone with them. And we really wanted to, and they told us how affordable the trip could be. But the thing that really gave me the confidence to do that was to make a very detailed budget. Like, this is what we're going to spend on lodging and transportation and flights and just everything as much as I could, so that I could try to save everything pretty close down to the penny. So I come from a really heavy like travel budgeting background. You fast forward a few years later and I learned about the Capital One Venture card, and we had used Discover cards for just cash back, but the Venture card was a great way to earn more points with a sign up bonus and to be able to erase travel purchases. So that's really where I kind of dipped my toe in, but I was really a Discover card and Venture card gal. And so it was more recently in the last couple of years that I really got more on board with getting multiple sign up bonuses and learning about different credit card currencies in order to just really level up what I've always been doing, which is using budgeting and any kind of savings hacks, cash back that I can use to make a trip as affordable as we want it to be.
Are you really into budgeting with everything or travel specific?
Everything. So I am one of those crazy YNAB people. I started out with spreadsheet budgeting when my husband moved out because he didn't know how to keep track of it. And he would have just saved every dime and only spent on bills if I didn't tell him, yes, you have some money that you can spend. So, and then like when we were first married, I always did all the budgeting and spreadsheets. But then like, as I got a job and our income grew, like I needed something more robust to take care of it. So I've been using YNAB for the last 5 years and it's been great. And as I have multiple credit cards and I'm keeping up with different payment schedules and things like that, having it all in one place has been such a lifesaver.
Does it notify you every time you have a credit card payment coming up? Because as someone who just sets everything on auto pay as soon as I get my card, and then I just don't really think about it too much.
So YNAB, it doesn't have a mechanism for payments. You can put in payments yourself and it does import transactions automatically. So when I have auto pay and I'm not putting in a manual transaction, it'll pull in those automatic payments. But since like we spend well below our means, all that, I don't worry about those auto payments, but somebody else would have to be watchful for that, even with YNAB.
That makes sense. I haven't used YNAB. I use Mint to track our transactions. Everything is categorized wrong. So I mostly am just like, did we spend this much on restaurants? And I try to look at stuff holistically. And if our spending is somewhat reasonable, I don't really care if it went towards going
absolutely
out or buying, yes, stuff on Amazon. I'm just like, overall, is the expense ratio where, right, we want it to be?
Right. And that can totally work, right? I just tend to like to get more granular about it.
That totally makes sense. That probably also works well in the points hobby because you can get super, super granular with points. So when you were first starting out, how did you set up a system for yourself to get into the game?
Yeah. So thankfully, Travel Freely was already around as I was getting in. And that was one of the biggest things that gave me some more confidence, right? That I could keep track of things and not forget about a card or something like that. So immediately setting up Travel Freely as I was diving more into points and miles was huge as far as that goes. So I didn't have to worry so much about keeping everything because it was just all in one app. But I do, of course, still have a spreadsheet that I have cards and when we applied for them and which ones I would like to ultimately apply for in the future, just because I like spreadsheets. So I've got that whole one, and I've got like overall spread tab for redemptions over time as well. Whereas I have individual trip spreadsheets, I also have this one where I have like all overall different hotels and flights and what we spend points and what the value was and things like that.
So when you were first getting started, what were some of the first cards that you got right away? And did you kind of take it one step at a time? Or was it more of like, this is awesome, let's get 12 cards all at once?
Yeah. So the Venture card was definitely the first travel card that I really had. And I had that for probably 2 or 3 years and just kept spending on that one. And it was nice to have $500 in travel rewards every now and again. But that was really before Capital One revamped their program. So really the first major travel hacking card that I got was the Chase Sapphire Preferred, right? Like that's a really great card for anybody starting out, of course. And then it was kind of like, oh, this works really well. So I got the Chase Sapphire Preferred. I got my husband, Eric, the Chase Sapphire Preferred. I got a Marriott card and just kept moving forward with that on that kind of 2 or 3 month applications at that point.
Awesome. When you were starting, did you already have the redemptions in mind and kind of go from there? Or did you see a Jennifer Garner commercial and you were like, yeah, what's in your wallet?
Oh, I know, right? Seriously. So actually, my sister-in-law was the one who told me that she had gotten the Capital One Venture card and was really enjoying it and free TSA PreCheck and Global Entry, all of that. And so I applied for the Venture card because of her recommendation. And what's just so funny is that she's now like just the Venture card. Like that's her only card. Like she's not interested in applying for anything else. And like, I'm going to try to slowly work on her, but I'm not going to force anybody to keep track of things that they don't want to. But so she's the one who initially like got me into the Venture card. And then it was really the Points and Miles community who opened my eyes up to more of the different currencies and the value there and the different cards.
Did you have to work too hard to get your husband on board, or was he already like, yeah, this sounds great?
He was super skeptical. So again, he is the super frugal one in our relationship. Like I like to save money, that he would not spend a dime if he wasn't confident that we could comfortably. So he was extremely nervous. So I got the Chase Sapphire Preferred card and I talked him through it and this is what I'm doing. And he was so skeptical, but he did let me apply for the Chase Sapphire Preferred for him. And so we got both of those and it was starting to go smoothly. And he was still pretty skeptical, but he trusts me on the financial side of things because I have managed the budget and investing and everything for our couple. So he was skeptical, but I do think after taking him to Savannah on Points and Miles and taking our annual trip down to Atlanta for a Braves game on Points and taking him to Colorado this year, like he's really evolved and is very supportive at this point. His biggest fear though is that I'm going to die and he's just going to be left with these credit cards and not know how to deal with them and not have any of the information. I'm like, you'll be okay. I'm not going to die.
That's a good thing to put in somebody's like estate planning / what's called the death box, of just the box that has all of the passwords to everything, where you're like, here's how I would like you to use these Chase points and these Amex points if I die. Yeah. Scatter my ashes on an around the world trip.
Yeah, seriously. So he's really glad that it works and he's really glad that I manage it, but it would drive him insane if he had to do it himself.
That makes absolute sense. So walk us through the process of when you want to take a trip to a national park. How do you price that out and work on earning the points for that specific kind of trip? Because I'm sure some people are thinking, well, if I'm going to go camping in a national park, there's not really a lot of points involved with that. So what is your planning process like?
Yeah, so I try to do as much research as I can about it because there's so many little nuances, and especially now more national parks are doing timed entry reservations, like Rocky Mountain National Park, where we went in Colorado, or Arches National Park, where we'd like to go later this year. So you have to look and see, first of all, do you have to get an advance ticket to get into the national park? You can't plan a vacation there if you don't know that you're going to need these entry permits. So I try to decide where we want to go, which national park or parks that we want to visit. I certainly look for, it's just like your typical vacation, right? Like, okay, what is the airport that we need to fly into to get there? Is there a direct flight from Charlotte, or are we going to have to connect? What are the lodgings around? Are there any Hyatt hotels? There's not a lot of Hyatt hotels near national parks, unfortunately. Is there a Marriott? Because there are Marriotts everywhere. Are there other hotel brands that we can work towards? And knowing that like Capital One transfers to Choice and Wyndham, which are more likely to have some of those like low budget things, and they're kind of all over as well. Then of course, like everything else, like your rental car. But the biggest difference about national parks is that if you know that you're going to two or three or four, or we went to five national parks, no, six national parks since we got our most recent national park pass. You pay $80 for an annual America the Beautiful National Park Pass for the entire year. And that covers like whoever can fit in your car. So it, most of the time it's just the two of us. But if we had four people in our car, all four of us would get in under the same park pass. But if you know that you're going to several national parks in a year, it can pay for itself easily. And we've gotten a ton of value out of it this year, of course, going to six national parks already. So that's been really huge. That's a big deal. And if you're going to go to a park that has timed entry, make sure you get that. If you are planning to camp in a national park, it's super important to look at that even ahead of time, because national parks are beautiful and popular, and camping is a really popular activity, a popular way to get into the national park itself. And so those can really buck up really fast too. So a couple of years ago, we camped in Zion National Park, and I looked ahead of time and I was able to find the camping nights that we needed, but they did fill up really, really fast. And we actually camped one night in the backcountry as well. So we carried all of our gear and our backpacks, and we stayed one night about 4 miles in, I believe. And so even those spots are limited, and you have to book those ahead of time as well. So it's a little bit different, but it's the same overall principle, right? Of figuring out where you're going, where you're going to stay, and making that reservation.
Does the park pass price vary based off of how many people you can put in your car, or is it the same price for a regular sedan versus a van?
Ooh, a van is a great question. I want to say there probably is a limit. I feel like I looked this up recently and it might be like 4 or 5 people in a car. I don't really worry about it because it's usually just the two of us, but it's probably 4 or 5 people in a vehicle, and maybe kids don't count. I don't know. It's something like that.
I was just wondering, for a lot of families that have 4, maybe 5 kids in the family, so there's 7 people total, because if it's the exact same price, that is a pretty sweet deal on the park pass.
Each annual pass admits pass owners and passengers in a non-commercial vehicle at per vehicle fee areas, and the pass owner plus 3 adults, not to exceed 4 adults, where per person fees are charged. Children under 16 are always free. And sometimes you have national parks where the time that they charge, if you're just going to pay for one off, sometimes they charge a 1 day fee or a few day fee or a week fee, right? So depending on the park that you're going to and how long you're staying, you would get more or less value out of that national park pass too.
You said you've been to 6 already this year. What is the calendar year?
So it's from whenever you buy it. So we bought our national park pass in July of 2022. So it's going to expire. I always forget if it's going to expire in July 2023. Yeah, so I think it's like good from July 2022 to June 2023. So in Colorado, in July, we went to 4 national parks in Colorado. In December, we went to Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. And last week, we went to Pinnacles National Park in California.
That makes a lot more sense. I thought the calendar year started in January. We are recording this in early January. So I'm like, are you going through 10 parks a day?
No, that would be way too busy for me. No. So it's 12 months from when you purchase the pass, which is great. That's a lot more flexible, right? And you could time it out and say, well, I'm going to buy the pass in, again, July, and then prioritize my national park trip in the first half of next year so that we can get more value out of it. So.
Do you have any favorite hotels that are near a national park? I know that everybody loves that Hyatt Place near Moab, Utah. Yeah. It used to be Category 2. It's now a Category 4. You can still get it with your free night, but it was a very expensive hotel, and it was only costing people 8,000 points. So that one's quite the favorite from people. Mm-hmm. But are there any others that are on your list?
So I have looked some of these things up, but I will say that when we went to Shenandoah National Park, we stayed at Keswick Hall, which is a small luxury hotel. So we were able to stay for 25,000 Hyatt points per night. That property is gorgeous. It's so luxurious. It was renovated last year and they added on to it. So everything is so fresh and so clean. The restaurant really was very good. The pool is beautiful. The golf course and the grounds are beautiful. So I would highly recommend Keswick Hall. and it's not far from the national park. I want to say like 30 miles, maybe. It doesn't take too long to get there, but that's at the southern entrance of Shenandoah. And then, of course, Shenandoah has a 100-mile stretch of roadway through it. So it can take a while to get to where you want to be in the Shenandoah National Park, but it's worth it. It's a gorgeous place to stay. And then when we went to Pinnacles National Park, we were actually staying at Alila Ventana Big Sur for our anniversary. And I told my husband about this trip and what we were going to do. And he's looking forward to it. And he said, looked up, he's like, oh, there's a national park like 2 hours away. And I said, yeah, but it's 2 hours away. I don't know that we're going to feel like doing all that. I just plan to go to the resort. And he was like, Mariah, you're crazy. You love national parks. We need to go to this national park while we're there. And so we did. And I'm so glad that we did. It was pouring down rain. We were the only people there. We did a 3 mile hike in the rain with the creeks just flowing and the water streaming off the beautiful Pinnacles and rocks. And we got to see Pinnacles National Park like almost nobody else sees it because it dries completely up in like the summertime. So it was gorgeous. And I'm so glad we went.
That is a very different experience than the one I had where it was kind of chilly. So I'm like, do I want to put on a robe to go to the hot tub that's like a few steps away? Right. No, I'm just going to hang out in my cabin and eat all of the all-inclusive food, the breakfast, the lunches, the dinners. Oh my God, the lavender iced tea.
So Eric loved the lavender lemonade that we got whenever we went there. And he went back and got some more the next day and got some more the next day. But he said it was never as good as the first day. He was so disappointed because it was excellent the first day. And then I figured that they probably didn't put enough lavender syrup or something in it the next couple of days, but he loved it too.
They only had it our first day. Granted, we only spent 2 nights there. It was like 3 days, 2 nights, but I kept looking for more. They never had more.
Oh, that's so funny. The woman made it for us when we first checked in. And then I went to ask her something the other day. And she was like, do you need anything else? And I was like, oh, I was looking for the lavender lemonade. And she was like, oh, I'll go make you one. And then later Eric asked for one. He's like, oh, I'll go make you some. So
maybe I should have just asked somebody to make me some lavender iced tea.
Maybe that's why it wasn't as good, because she had to like individually make it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we've talked about Alila Ventana before on this show. It's one of the most amazing redemptions that I've had. Everyone's like, is it super overrated? It's not. I promise you guys, it's absolutely worth it.
It's so relaxing. The service was perfect. Just like every little need was just anticipated. I booked it literally 13 months ago before the devaluation. So I got 3 nights for 80,000 points, which is not possible anymore. So that was wonderful. We had a fabulous time.
And when you're hiking through the forest, it smells fancy.
Like, it does.
Even the hiking smells like a Williams Sonoma or something, because there's the wild lavender, you have the pine trees, you have wild sage, you have the bay leaf trees. There's just a lot of like very good smelling plants in the area.
So nice. And it's just so laid back, and you're like, I'm eating all this food. I need to walk the grounds. I need to do some of the hikes, right? Just because everything's so rich and delicious. You want to eat it all.
I took the coldest yoga class of my life there. It was about 40 degrees. And I'm like, I am going to take advantage of every activity that they have at this place. So we did astrology. It was freezing. I did yoga. I roasted some marshmallows. It was freezing. And it wasn't actually that cold. I'm just a wimp because I live in Las Vegas now. We went around November. It was probably 40, maybe 50. We didn't have our winter gear yet. We had moved from New Jersey to Las Vegas, left all of our winter gear at my parents' house because I'm like, oh, we're not going to need that until Thanksgiving when they come visit us. And it was very cold, but so beautiful. And I booked it again for July this coming year. So I'm excited that it'll be a little bit warmer and I can enjoy the pool. But what are some other hotels that you've stayed at near national parks?
That is a great question. When we did our Colorado trip this year, we did stay at the Fairfield Inn, a Marriott property in Alamosa, which was close to, I want to say that one was close to Great Sand Dunes National Park. We also stayed at the Holiday Inn Montrose near Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park. Incidentally, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It was fine. There's not a whole lot of places to stay around Black Canyon and the Gunnison National Park. We ended up staying there, booking through the Chase portal and using the $50 hotel credit coming from the Chase Sapphire Preferred card. So we got the hotel night for $125 instead of $175. So that was a pretty good deal. And then flying into Denver and out of Denver, we stayed one night at the Hyatt Centric Denver and one night at the Grand Hyatt Denver, which was really nice just to have a nice night in town closer to the Denver airport. So we really enjoyed that for sure. I've done some collections on my Instagram page of Hyatt hotels near national parks and various hotels that can be booked with points near Rocky Mountain and Great Sand Dunes. And I'd like to do more of those. It's just very time intensive to do all the research to collect those. But I see more of those in my future to just to round up what the options are, because it really can be difficult to say, okay, I want to go to this national park and pull up the Hyatt app and pull up the Marriott app and pull up Google and just like look for all the options and try to figure out what would be best for your goals and your cards and everything. So it'd be nice to have more of that information pulled together in one place for each park.
There is a new website called Aways that does this, but it's very, very city focused.
Interesting.
So you could search Paris or New York and it'll say, here's all the points hotels with Hyatt or Marriott or Hilton or IHG. And here's the ones that are going to be the best options for you to book on points. So there is an app that does this, but right now they've just done the top 100 cities as far as like size of cities in the world. So maybe they can make a national park version, because I know we've had a skiing episode and that can be a really good option too, where in the summer, if you're going into Colorado, all of the ski resorts are very cheap. I would not book them on points because they're still category 7. You should not pay 30,000 Hyatt points to stay at the Christiana Lodge in the summer. I paid $150. So that's another option too, as you're kind of driving through the Colorado mountains, is all of the different ski resorts. But then they're going to have really, really cheap cash prices in the summer.
Yeah, that is a good idea. I looked at some of those and they could be definitely great stops along the way. If you were going from like Rocky Mountain down to a different national park around, they weren't super close to where I was interested in staying and doing activities, but it would be really cool to just like make that part of your trip, like part in Vail and part in Rocky Mountain National Park. If somebody wasn't focused, I was really focused on getting to all four national parks during our 2-week trip. So
which ones are you planning on in the future? And do you know what hotels are near there?
So I am this year planning to do Arches National Park. So of course, that's the Hyatt Place Moab there. Next year, we have our 10-year wedding anniversary, and our plan is to go to Alaska. And we'd like to probably go to at least 2 of the national parks, as many as I can reasonably do. But I'm still in the very early stages of trying to plan that one. So I know that there are some Hyatt hotels there, certainly other options, but depending on where we end up going and staying, we may have to book some things that are more private, very small hotels. So I'll be looking for options and considering. I now have the Chase Sapphire Reserve card. So is it better to book in the portal? I'll have to weigh all of our options there.
I'm surprised that they have Hyatt hotels. A lot of the national parks don't have Hyatt as an option. I went to my brother-in-law's wedding, which was near Glacier National Park in Montana. And then we all stayed at a cabin, but they had some options near West Glacier or Whitefish, and they were largely Marriott hotels, and they were pretty good redemptions for like your 35,000 free night certificate with Marriott. I think there was like a Town Place Suites or a Courtyard Marriott maybe. So there were some other options too in West Glacier and Whitefish if you're looking to go to Glacier National Park. And I know there's Hyatt Place St. George, which is Zion or Bryce Canyon.
Yes, that is very close to Zion National Park. You have to go from St. George and travel a little bit. I think it's like an hour maybe to Springdale, Utah. And Springdale is right outside Zion. And so Springdale definitely has a Marriott. Spring Hill, something like that, definitely has a Marriott there and a few hotel options like on the strip right before you get into Zion. But if you don't mind staying about an hour away and driving into Zion, that Hyatt Place in St. George is a great option.
And I know Antelope Canyon isn't necessarily a national park, but you do have the Hyatt Place Lake Powell out there, which is pretty close. and that's a good one as well. I just know all the ones that are close to Las Vegas because one of these days we'll do like a weekend trip.
It's nice. Yeah, we love all of the Western national parks. I think that's largely because I'm in North Carolina. We have a few that are close, but so many are just out west. It makes me want to take so many trips to the West Coast.
What do you normally fly to get into these national parks? Because they are not usually near a major airport. There's not, obviously, like New York City National Park.
Yeah, so far we've been pretty lucky. Like we were able to fly American to Denver to get to the Colorado National Parks. We flew American to Las Vegas to drive down to go to Zion National Park. In the past, we've flown Delta into Bozeman to get to Yellowstone. I can't remember who we flew to Glaciers Airport. I just look for whoever is available at that point and I'll decide, do I have points? Do I want to pay cash for this flight? But you're right. Sometimes the national park, the closest airport is a smaller airport or a regional airport. And like there is even an airport in St. George closer to Zion National Park, but they have like seasonal flights, right? So you won't always be able to fly there. So it's just a matter of looking at when are you going, what flights are available and what carriers and deciding, do I have enough points? And the biggest thing, of course, my travel style is to book as far out as possible, 12, 13 months as far as possible. And so that's, of course, going to give you the best availability most of the time for domestic air travel. Course.
Obviously, once you then fly into these airports, you have to rent a car. What is your process for renting a car? And what would you say is the best way to do that while playing the game of points and optimizing for points or cards that have trip protections or any of that?
These days, lean towards using AutoSlash and just earning points from my credit card spend. I'm sure people are familiar with AutoSlash, but they will look up different rental car options with various carriers for the airport you want to fly in and the type of car that you want to ride in and the different cards and membership programs that you have. And so I find it really helpful not just to start there because they're shopping around for you, but then also to book a refundable rate and then have AutoSlash track that rental car and that refundable rate and look for the prices to go down. I've had some good success with initially booking a rate because I'm booking 13 months out. I get a decent rate a lot of the times, but then having it go down months over months and they'll email me and I can rebook if necessary and then have them track that new rental rate to see if it goes down further. And then I do book with a card like the Capital One Venture X or the Chase Sapphire Reserve that do have good rental car protection, which is crucial. And if you book with something like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, you should get 3x points on travel. Or if you book with the Venture X, of course, you're getting 2x on everything. So that's a good value for your rental car. So I have a good success story and kind of a sad story about rental cars. One is that I was tracking my AutoSlash rental car rate for our San Francisco Big Sur trip. And it started out, I don't know, maybe $350, $300 for 4 days, you know, 4 nights, 5 days, which isn't horrible. But then I saw it go down to, they had sent me that if I booked a prepaid rate, I could lock in like $195. So I went ahead and did that, which was great. You know, it saved us some money, some cash on the trip. But what happened was when we were flying out to San Francisco last week, they were having horrible rains and winds, really high winds. And so we got diverted and landed in San Jose. And San Jose is actually closer to Big Sur than San Francisco. It's only a 2-hour ride instead of a 3-hour ride. So I quickly looked and I was like, okay, we can get a rental car. Eric was like, are you sure we can get a rental car? I was like, yeah, we can get a rental car. We're 1 hour closer. And so we get off the plane with our carry-on bags. We didn't check any bags. We get over, we pick up the rental car. It's only like $225 and all that's great. Except I had booked a prepaid non-refundable rate, $195 for our rental car in San Francisco. So last week, not only did I pay $195 for the rental car that I originally booked, I also paid $225 for the rental car we actually ended up using.
Well, that's more points earned and a lesson learned.
Yes. So for me, that lesson is always book a refundable rate or put reminders everywhere in my calendar that this is a non-refundable rate and you need to put your butt in San Francisco to get that rental car.
I think a lot of people feel that way about flights too, where they're like, I'm just going to book JetBlue basic, most basic, United economy. I can save $20. But really, if you pay an extra $20 for the ticket, if anything goes wrong, which obviously, like as we've seen in the past couple of years, things just go wrong all the time. That extra $20 per ticket can save you. Also, you get to choose your seat. You might get a free carry-on bag so that you're not nickel and dimed on everything where you end up paying more than $20 anyway. So it is always good to just kind of compare what you're getting with each fare, because sometimes you're like, I might need like the more flexible rate. I used to always book non-refundable, non-cancelable, cheapest thing I could possibly do, because I'm like, I mean, what could happen in life? Nothing could happen. Something always happens. So just, yeah, for everybody listening, just run the math on that and see if, maybe I'll end up spending more than $20 on carrying on my own bag anyway. And I do want to have a window seat. So it could very much be worth that extra 20 or 30 bucks to go to a regular economy seat instead of a super stripped down basic economy seat.
So take it for us, lean towards flexibility in your rental cars, in your flights, use points if you're able to, because it's so much easier to cancel those generally. Lean towards flexibility.
Absolutely. So what's the win story?
So the win story is that I used AutoSlash to book our rental car for the Arches, whatever national park trip for next year. And I was booking super far out, probably 11 months, as soon as like the calendar was available for that time period. And AutoSlash was able to get me 7 days, 6 nights for the rental car. And it was $205. And I noticed that they were able to get me that rate because of my Costco membership, which is, you know, $60 or $120 a year, depending on which plan you have. When I went, I booked that rate because that was fantastic. And that was for an intermediate SUV. That wasn't for the tiniest little car. That was for an SUV, which I would expect us to need probably, because sometimes national park roads are dirt roads. So I went back and I looked at, okay, what if I don't have a Costco membership, uncheck that, and like the next best cars are like $500, $600, $700 in the same category. So AutoSlash was able to get me a great rate based on the cards, the memberships that I had, which was fantastic. And I locked that flexible rate in, but something changes, which I don't think it'll go lower than that, but I could always change it. Or if our plans change and we had to cancel the whole trip, I could cancel it that way. But also it can really pay to have something like a Costco membership, which gives you other discounts as well.
Yeah, I should do more videos on Costco tricks. People seem to love Costco tricks because I don't know if people know, you don't have to be a Costco member to buy alcohol. Most states, I can put a list of states where you can buy alcohol from a Costco without a membership because they make it illegal to charge a membership fee in order to buy alcohol, but you can buy all sorts of other things there. You can buy prescription glasses without being a Costco membership. You can fill prescriptions. There's a few other things that you can do too. Guys, let us know if you want to hear more about different Costco hacks, because I feel like that could be a popular topic as well.
Oh, I completely agree. People love to shop at Costco just because that's amazing, but all the other perks that come along with it, most people don't know, I'm sure.
So, any other tips for people who like points and miles and want to go visit more national parks?
I would definitely say that having your budget in mind is key. Some people have a pot of money that they might use for travel, and as long as that pot doesn't go too low, they're comfortable, right? But for me, I like to plan everything out so I at least have anticipated expenses, know what I'm doing. So I do really appreciate using a spreadsheet for that. I do have one that I made and that's freely available and that I share. And what's nice about it is that I anticipate expenses. I can put in my transactions, pull them straight from YNAB, put them in my spreadsheet, and it'll tally it up for me into the appropriate categories. And then it gives me cents per point for each hotel or flight that I used points or miles for. But it also gives me an overall, okay, how many points did I spend on this vacation? And what was the average value of those points? And what was the overall savings there? So very quickly, with little effort, I can just look at my Colorado spreadsheet and see that I used 101,000 points or miles. We saved $1,700 using those points and miles for 1.69, 1.7 cents per point, which is decent for an overall average, especially considering I used some points for a Fairfield Inn with Marriott, which is not a super high redemption value for them. But I also think it's important to think about the other ways that you can save as well, not just the points and miles, but using different credit card credits. Like when the VentureX came out and it had the vacation rental credit, we used $400 in vacation rental credits towards our Colorado trip. I have the Hyatt business card, and so I got two separate $50 credits from that card. Using my American Airlines Gold status, we got free checked bags round trip, which we really needed for our national park trip to account for all of the hiking gear and trekking poles and hiking boots and all of that. I have a local science museum membership, and so there's often deals or even free museum tickets around the country based on that ASTC science museum membership. And so we went to the Denver Museum of Science and our two tickets were free. That's a $40 value.
Also, for anybody with Bank of America cards, there's Bank of America Day for free museum entry as well. It is an absolute zoo on those days, but if you want to do a free activity and you have a Bank of America card, like the Alaska card is the one that I have, then that's a pretty good way to save money as well.
Absolutely. Or if you want to avoid crowds, know not to go on those days.
Yes.
Absolutely. I also like to use the Slide app. It's very similar to Flues in that you're able to buy gift cards for different merchants, and Slide does cash back as well. It's different in that it doesn't code those transactions for the different merchants. So if somebody's interested in a gift card, just comparing Flues versus Slide to see which is better when you factor in the credit card points that you would earn, and then the cash back for Flues versus Slide for that. So I use that to buy a lot of Airbnb gift cards for our Colorado trip and saved about $65 that way.
Awesome. Yeah, those are all really good tips and really actionable too with downloading the Slide app. I have not tried that one out yet, so I will definitely put that one on my list of apps to check out and review. Speaking of great tips, can you give a shout out to one or two other people on the internet who you would recommend listeners follow for even more awesome points and miles tips?
Absolutely. There are two that I would love to recommend. There's Joanna at Joyful of Travels. She does fantastic overviews and guides for the different locations that she visits with fantastic activities and fun food and ways to really get in the culture and know the locals. And then also the Austrias, Jess and Dom at From Our Points of View. They also have very beginner-friendly, wonderful points and miles tips, and they lean towards Amex. They like Chase too, but they lean towards Amex. So if you're tired of seeing Chase in your feed and want some more Amex content, they've got some good stuff there.
Perfect. And where can we find you on the internet?
So again, I'm Mariah, Points for the Memories. And you can find me on Instagram most of the time. I also have my website, pointsforthememories.com. And you can download my free Points for the Memories trip budget spreadsheet at the link in my bio.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show. This was great to kind of discuss budgeting and also national parks and all the different hotels that people can stay at near a national park, rental car tips, and some more other free tips like free museums and other things to do while you're visiting a national park. So this was so much value. Thank you so much for coming onto the show today.
It's been really nice to talk with you, Julia. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!